Once again, this week, we have two parshas, Haremos and Kedoshim, and I'd like to take a look at the sections from both of them. And with regards to Haremos, as we know, the first half, almost, of Parshas Haremos deals with the Avodah of Yom Kippur. But as a prelude even to the first half of the Parsha, we have something of a reference to something that happened a couple of weeks ago, namely the death of Nadav and Avihu. That somehow forms the introduction to Avodas Yom HaKippurim on a simple level. They went too close, and that's out of bounds now, with the exception of Yom Kippur. There's a very interesting parshanut question that is raised by a number of Mefarshim. If we take a look at the first two psukim, something may strike us as noteworthy. Perek Tet Zayin, Pasuk Aleph. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe acharemo shnei bnei Aaron, bekarvasam lefnei Hashem vayamusu. That's Pasuk Aleph, Nadav and Avihu, they came too close and they died. Pasuk Beis, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Daber el Aaron Achicha, Hashem told Moshe, tell Aaron, Va'al Yavo b'chaleis al HaKodesh, and this now becomes the message to Aaron. He can't enter the Kodesh, that is to say, on the other side of the Paroches, any time, unless it's as the Psukim continue to describe in detail. What's interesting is, we have speaking verbs at the beginning of Pasuk Aleph and the beginning of Pasuk Beis. Now, that almost sounds as if Hashem's words to Moshe are introduced twice. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe, and we're expecting some type of message, even though we don't get it, seemingly, because the rest of the Pasuk isn't really a message. It's time and circumstance. So Hashem's words to Moshe aren't actually introduced until Pasuk Beis, where the whole thing starts again. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe. So it almost sounds as if Hashem speaks to Moshe twice, but the first time he didn't say anything, because that's the Torah talking to us. Acharemo shnei bnei Aaron is the Torah talking to us and describing the timing of the words, but we don't yet have words of Hashem to Moshe. Many Mefarshim are bothered by this, and the Parsha almost seems to start twice. From a certain point of view, one could sidestep the question in the sense that Dibur and Amira, Vayidaber as opposed to Vayomer, are not exactly the same. They're not synonymous. Vayidaber is the act of speaking, and Vayomer is more the content of saying. Lahavdil, as we would say, so-and-so spoke. Okay, and what did he say? And hopefully the answer is something. But they are two separate things, which means that as soon as you see the word Vayidaber, you shouldn't yet be expecting content. It's just describing Hashem speaking. Which means, from that point of view, there doesn't have to be a difficulty. Because you should only expect content when the word Vayomer begins, which is a content-priming word. But nonetheless, it is interesting that words that are normally so close together, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe le'mor, I mean, they really do form a kind of a unit. Here, they're prized apart. One of them introduces Pasuk Aleph, the other introduces Pasuk Beis. And I would like to present an answer to this question based on a very interesting principle that is to be found in one of the early Acharon. And we will begin by referring to a somewhat obscure statement in the Medrash. It's in the Psikta Zutrasi, which is a smaller collection of Midrashim. It follows the Parshas. And in the Psikta, in Parsha Shmini, and Parsha Shmini is when Nadav and Avihu died. I mean, that's where it's described in real time in the Torah. And the Psikta says, Kevan shemesu Nadav v'Avihu. When Nadav and Avihu died, the way they did, Yod'u Yisrael shehashchina yarda lamata. Then the Jewish people knew that the Shechina had descended to down to this world, to these lower realms. And the question is, what exactly does the Medrash mean to say? Well, when Nadav and Abihu died, people said, oh, the Shechinah is... In what way? One of the great Gedolim of the 1600s, the Rama Mipano, Rabbi Menachem Azarin Mipano, he's of the school of Kabbalah, and he's one of those that spreads Kabbalah really from the Talmidim of the Arizal, or his Rebbeim, and it spreads in Europe largely in great measure due to him. He is the Rama Mipano, and he has a sefer called Asara Ma'amoros, one of his sefer. And he comments regarding something that we're familiar with, I believe. It's a Rashi in the beginning of Parshas Chayei Sara, about the age at which a person becomes liable for punishment, bidei shamayim. As we know, bidei adam, of course, it's from the age of 13. And it's very interesting. I mean, most bar mitzvah drushas are not really about this. But a child becomes, boy or girl, when they become bar or bas mitzvah, become liable for obligations and penalties and punishments for averus. The Torah is telling them they're an adult, they're grown up. Which is certainly a counter message to what we hear nowadays, where the age of maturity is ever on the rise. And that's in terms of Beis Din Shel Mata. However, Rashi famously comments in the beginning of Chayei Sara, Bayu Chayei Sara, Meya Shana, Esrim Shana, Sheva Shanim, 100 is like 20, 20 is like 7. And Rashi there says that 100 is like 20. In what sense was she like 20 when she was 100? Just like, says Rashi, Beis Din Shel Mala, do not punish a person until the age of 20. So too, Sarah, even at the age of 100, it's like she was 20. In other words, without sin. And that Rashi, it's based on a Medrash, quoting a Medrash, that is to say. So now we understand, interestingly, that in terms of onshei shamayim, punishments from heaven, it's actually more lenient. One has more of a time to be considered liable, not at the age of 13, 12 or 13, but rather at the age of 20. Okay, and that's the Rashi there. Bas kuf ke bas kaf. Says the Rama Mipano. There is a qualification here. When we say that there are different rules, so to speak, in terms of onshei shamayim from onshei Beis Din Shel Mata, that's when the two realms are distinct. However, when the Shechinah resides in this world, so as we know, often Beis Din Shel Mala takes its cue from Beis Din Shel Mata. When the Shechinah resides in this world, that is to say in the time of the Beis HaMikdash or the time of the Mishkan, when the Shechinah is closer, so when the Shechinah comes into the world, the Shechinah, so to speak, abides by the rules of the world, which are to punish also from the age of 13. That's a very major qualification within this well-known discussion. Says the Chidah, this statement, proviso of the Rama Mipano, will help explain to us, or answer for us, the famous question of the Maharal in the Gur Aryeh. The Maharal asks the question, here we are saying that in terms of heavenly punishments, divine punishments, they don't punish until the age of 20. Says Maharal, I have a kasha. There exists something called a korban chatos. If a person unintentionally violates an avera, certain type of avera, so he has to bring a sin offering. And what defines that type of sin? If it's the sort of thing that had he done it on purpose, he would have been liable for the severe penalty of kares, which is premature demise. So if he does it unintentionally, he has to bring a chatos. Now we know that a person has to bring a chatos if they violate, let's say Shabbos unintentionally or such like. What is the age that obligates a person to bring a chatos? It's bar and bas mitzvah. And now says Maharal, if the age for bringing a chatos is bar mitzvah, which it is, and the definition of a chatos is that had you done this on purpose, you would have been culpable, bidei shamayim, that tells you that bidei shamayim, they also punish from the age of 13. QED. That's the kasha of the Maharal. Says the Chidah, beautifully, according to the proviso or the division, the distinction of the Rama Mipano, there's no kasha. For when do we say that the age is later for Anshei Shamayim? That's when there's no Beis HaMikdash. That's when the Shekhinah is distinct from the realm of this world. But of course, definition, the liability for a Korban Chatos is when there is a Beis HaMikdash. When there is a Beis HaMikdash, all agree that even Anshei Shamayim are from the age of 13, hence the requirement of a Chatos, also from the age of 13. So it's quite a discussion, and there are many issues to be considered. But what does this have to do with us? We're innocently trying to learn Parshas Acharemos. How did we get into this discussion? Says the Chidah, the Medrash tells us that Nadav and Avihu were not yet 20 years old at the time that they died. That's very interesting, because that once again is a challenge to the whole principle we have, that because they were killed Bidei Shamayim, that's for sure, it doesn't get more Bidei Shamayim than that. And what about the fact that Anshei Shamayim don't occur before the age of 20? Except, once again, that day was the day of the first operation of the Mishkan. And once the Mishkan was operational, so the Shekhinah was in the lower realms, and therefore Anshei Shamayim also applied from the age of 13. And that is the explanation, that's the intent of the words of the Psikta that we quoted before. Kevan Shemesu Nadav Aviyu, once Nadav Aviyu died, Yadu Shehashchina Yarda Lamata. People then saw the Shekhinah has come down. For what it means is, if Min HaShemayim, they killed them and held them culpable and responsible from at the age of less than 20, which is Bez Din Shalmata, it must be that even Bnei Shamayim are going by Bez Din Shalmata rules, that must be the Shekhinah is here. Now the baton is taken on here by, thus far from the Chidah, and the one who continues the discussion is the Bnei Yisoschar. The Bnei Yisoschar is one of the Hasidic greats, Reb Tzvi Elimelech Shapira of Dinov, and he quotes all of the above, and the Rama Mipano, and the Chidah, and as far as he's concerned, everything we have just said is in the first pasuk of this week's Parsha. We had a Shaila. The pasuk begins Vayidaber. The next pasuk begins Vayomer. Both of them denote communication of information, of a message, except the message doesn't seem to begin until Pasuk Beis. Pasuk Aleph isn't Hashem talking to Moshe, it's the Torah talking to us, giving us time and place. Says the Bnei Yisoschar, no, there's a message in Pasuk Aleph. What's the message? Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe. Hashem spoke to Moshe. Acharei Moshe nei Bnei Aaron. After the death of the two Bnei Aaron. And what did he say to him? They were too close, they were in the proximity of the Shekhinah, that's why they died. That's a message, that's an explanation that was required at the time. And that's the first communication, and then the next communication is introduced with the word Vayomer in Pasuk Beis and onwards. So it's a very interesting, it's rooted in Parshanut, the issue in terms of the two Psukim, but of course the answer comes from the discussion of the Rama Mipano and the Chidah with regards to this principle of Anshei Shamayim under the age of 20. Okay, so that's a bit of an unusual look at Pasuk Aleph, which we just gloss over really to get to Pasuk Beis. Having discussed a little bit the opening of Parshas Acharemos, I'd like to again step back and refer actually to a discussion that takes place in the Haggadah. And once again, we'll have to see what it has to do with us here in Acharemos. As we know, there is a discussion amongst the Mefarshim, amongst the Tanaim, amongst the rabbis of the Mishnah, as to the mitzvah of remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim every day. And this is the famous Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. He's 18, he's really 18, he looks like 70. No one really was swayed by any of his arguments till Ben Zoma came. He was very insistent that Yetzias Mitzrayim should be mentioned not only in the day, but also at night. The Chachamim weren't interested until Ben Zoma came along, and it all hinged on Kol Yemei Chayecha, as we know. Kol Yemei Chayecha, what does it come to include? The night? Or maybe it's Lahavi Lemos HaMashiach, and those are words that we have said not too long ago. What's not so well known is that this actually, this question as to whether Yetzias Mitzrayim, mentioning leaving Mitzrayim at night, became the subject of differing minhagim between Bavel and Eretz Yisrael. In Bavel, they would mention Yetzias Mitzrayim at night. In Eretz Yisrael, they wouldn't. And in fact, the practice in Eretz Yisrael, which is referred to by the Gemara always as Ma'arava, because it's kind of there to the west, and Rav Yosef quotes their practice. This is in the Gemara, in Maseches Brachos, in Daf Yudalet, Amar Rav Yosef. Kama ma'ala hashmaitza. How wonderful is this report, is this news that I received, that in Ma'arava, in Eretz Yisrael, they wouldn't mention Yetzias Mitzrayim in Shema. Now that's the third parsha of Kriyat Shema. So what would they do? Would they miss out the parsha of Kriyat Shema? I mean, completely? What they would do is, they would say, "Vayomer Hashem Moshe Lemor, Daber al Bnei Yisrael va'amarta aleihem, Ani Hashem Elokeichem," and MS, and then move on to whatever. The text of their bracha after Kriyat Shema also is discussed there. But for our purposes, it's very interesting. They kind of streamlined this. They zipped up, alas, the third parsha of Kriyat Shema, missing out the entire content, right? There's no tzitzis and there's no yetzias mitzrayim, because all of those things, as far as they're concerned, don't apply during the day. Okay. So that was, for them, that was halacha l'maisa. You wouldn't hear of yetzias mitzrayim in the night. What about Shema? The third paragraph of Kriyat Shema is one verse long. And it's the two bookends of the paragraph, and none of its actual content. Okay. Meforshim actually are intrigued by two things here. Number one, of course, officially all eyes are on Bnei Ma'arava. What's behind their practice? Why don't they mention Yetzias Mitzrayim at night? And then that's back to the Haggadah again. But there are other Mefarshim who are actually more interested in Rav Yosef. Because Rav Yosef, in his introduction to this practice, he's very effusive about it. He's very excited about it. Normally, when you report something that they do in Eretz Yisrael, you say something like, this is what they do in Eretz Yisrael. And you get down to business, and everybody understands that. Here, Rav Yosef, it sounds like he couldn't get over it. His words of introduction are, Kama ma'ala hashmaitza, how wonderful is this Shemua, you know what they do in Eretz Yisrael. He thinks it's amazing, which is interesting, because he didn't actually follow it in practice. He lives in Bavel. And that really intrigued the Mefarshim. Why was Rav Yosef so taken by this practice? At the end of the day, they missed out the third parsha of Kriyat Shema. Some people do that anyway. So that's an interesting shaila, because it's observing, in a sense, the way that he introduced the whole thing. And there are one or two very interesting answers to explain Rav Yosef's excitement. Actually, Rishonim raise a question. The practice of the Bnei Ma'arava, are they going to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim at night? Yes, no, that's however they rule. But the way that they dealt with the section of Kriyat Shema seems quite objectionable. Because here is a principle. Psukim, when we read Psukim as reading them, are not allowed to be cut in half. They're not allowed to be truncated. You can't stop in the middle of a pasuk. You can't start in the middle of a pasuk. In the words of the Gemara, which is these words are said twice in the Shas, in Maseches Tanis and in Maseches Megillah, called Psuka de lo Paske Moshe. Any place that Moshe did not stop the pasuk, anando paskinan. So we don't stop the pasuk. You can't, because it almost sounds like you're misrepresenting the true form of the pasuk. And that it's wrong to do that. Now, if that's the case, then leaving aside the fact that in Eretz Yisrael they felt one doesn't need to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim at night, but what do they do to the parsha of Kriyat Shema? They began the opening pasuk, Daber b'nei Yisrael v'amarta alehem, and the end of that is Vasulehem tzitzis, but they're not talking about tzitzis. So they go straight into Ani Hashem Elokeichem, which is the tail end of the final pasuk, which begins Ani Hashem Elokeichem asher etzeis yitzchem me'eretz Mitzrayim yesh lachem lelokim Ani Hashem Elokeichem. So for purposes of their missing out everything in the middle, they took the first half of the opening pasuk, the tail half of the concluding pasuk, but that's not acceptable. They took two psukim, they divided them in half. That's the question of the Shita Mukabetzes. The answer, would you believe, is in Parshas Acharemos, when no one is talking about that. For let us consult Vayikra Perek Yudches Pasuk Aleph. This is the Parsha of Arayos. It's famous for being the Kriyas HaTorah for Yom Kippur afternoon. Pasuk Aleph, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemor. Pasuk Beis, Daber El Bnei Yisrael V'omato Aleihem Ani Hashem Elokeichem. Says the Shita Mekubetzes, this is a find. Because actually, this is what they would say in Bnei Ma'arava. You can no longer object. You can't say something like this. You can only say full psukim. Because lo and behold, what they said is a pasuk. Daber b'nei Yisrael v'amata alehem, ani Hashem Elokeichem. It's from Vayikra, Perek Yud Ches, pasuk beis. That's the answer of the Shita Mekubetzes. And says the Maratz Chayas, now perhaps we can get a sense of why Rav Yosef was so excited about it, because it was such an elegant way of harnessing and using what actually really is a pasuk. They were able to practice what they felt needed to be said, didn't need to be said, and they utilized this pasuk in order not to be in contravention of having half psukim. So if all the psukim are available to you, so then you know which ones to use and where. That's why Rav Yosef was so excited. It's a great chap on the part of the Bnei Ma'arav. Another explanation, which is really very wonderful, is found in the Sefer Be'er Yosef. And he directs our attention to the fact that the third parsha of Kriyat Shema, as we know, I mean, all eyes so far have been on Yetzias Mitzrayim. Do you mention it? Do you not mention it? They said no, we say yes. There's something else in the third parsha of Kriyat Shema. It's the parsha of Tzitzis, which means in order to leave out the entire parsha, one needs to be of the opinion that nothing in that paragraph is applicable at night. Not Yetzias Mitzrayim, and not Tzitzis. Okay, so apparently in Eretz Yisrael, they were of the opinion that Tzitzis, the mitzvah Tzitzis, does not apply at night, which by the way happens to be the halacha. Now, how does that affect us? Well, why does the mitzvah tzitzis not apply at night? Does the Torah say it's not at night? So the answer comes, it's derived from the words Ure'isem Oso. Ure'isem Oso, the Torah says, see it. And of course, that doesn't translate into an active obligation to see the tzitzis, but rather it's framing the mitzvah. Ure'isem Oso says the Gemara applies to a time when you could naturally see, namely by day, to the exclusion of night. Okay, that's the source of the exclusion of night from tzitzis, ure'isem oso, prat la'layla. Actually, there is an opinion in the Gemara that the mitzvah of tzitzis applies at night as well, which is interesting, because what about ure'isem oso? Doesn't that say that it's only by day and not by night? Says the Gemara in Maseches Menachos, those who say that the mitzvah of tzitzis applies by night, and they clearly do not exclude it from Ure'isem Oso, because they exclude from Ure'isem Oso someone who can't see. As far as that opinion is concerned, it applies by night, right? By day and by night, Ure'isem Oso excludes someone who's blind. If he can't see, he's potter from the mitzvah of tzitzis. Okay, so it's a machlokas. Says Be'er Yosef, we should know something about Rav Yosef. He states, actually, for there is an opinion, although no one passes like this, I don't think, that someone who is blind is actually exempt from all mitzvahs. Rav Yosef said in Maseches Kiddushin and Daf Kaf Tes, if anyone can verify for me that a blind person is actually obligated in all mitzvahs, I will make a yomta for him. I'll make a suda for him. Avidna yoma tava l'rabbanan. Because Rav Yosef was blind. And therefore, it was important for him to receive, you know, solid corroboration that someone who's blind in principle is chayav in all the mitzvahs. And he says, if anyone could verify this for me, I'll make a party for them. I'll make a party for me, and everyone's invited. This actually is the source of making a su'uda at a bar mitzvah, says the Maharshal in the Yamshel Shlomo, in the 7th Perek. When you think about it, if you really think what a bar mitzvah is, essentially a bar mitzvah or bas mitzvah is when the boy and girl become obligated in mitzvahs. Generally speaking, becoming obligated in something doesn't normally result in throwing a party. But lo and behold, there's a concept of a sudas mitzvah for a bar and bas mitzvah. Where does it come from? It comes from Rav Yosef. Why was it so important for him to be chayav? Because Godol hamitzuva va'osa misha'ena mitzuva va'osa. It's greater. He doesn't just want to voluntarily keep the mitzvahs. He wants to be obligated because then all of his mitzvahs are greater. And therefore, says the Maharshal, he was prepared to lay out a suda just for someone who informed him that he's actually chayav. Certainly when a child becomes chayav, they should in kind make a suda. That's the source for bar and bas mitzvah being a suudos mitzvah. In any case, says the Be'er Yosef, perhaps we can get further insight into why Rav Yosef was so excited about this practice of the Bnei Ma'arava. Because even though in principle Rav Yosef has already established that he's obligated in all mitzvahs, but some people exempt a blind person from the mitzvah of tzitzis, isn't that so? Or re'isa moso? And therefore, says Rav Yosef, I'm very happy to hear of what they do in Ma'arava. Because in Ma'arava, in Eretz Yisrael, they miss out the whole of the third paragraph of Kriyat Shema. That means they hold nothing in it applies at night. Not mentioning Yetzias Mitzrayim, and not Tzitzis. But if they hold that the mitzvah of Tzitzis, that's a whole country, and it's Eretz Yisrael, that the mitzvah of Tzitzis doesn't apply at night, that means that the exclusion of Re'isim or so for them is directed towards excluding at night. But as far as a blind person is concerned, he is well chayav, and that's me. And that's why Rav Yosef was so excited to hear this, to report this practice of Bnei Ma'arava. So it's fascinating to see how every aspect of the Gemara, not only what Rav Yosef said, but the way that he says it, and to see how much is behind that. Okay, so we've had one or two tangential looks at Parshas HaRemos, and that will have to do us for the time being, as we move into Parshas Kedoshim. And I want to move literally to the heart of Parshas Kedoshim, to the mitzvah of Ahavt l'Recha Kamocha, because there's a great deal to say. Hillel is famous for saying that everything after Ahavt l'Recha Kamocha is commentary. But as we will soon find out, there's a great deal of commentary regarding the words Ahavt l'Recha Kamocha themselves. So that's to be found in Perek Yudtes, Pasuk Yudches. It's the second half of the pasuk, which begins Lo tikom v'lo titoris b'nei amecha, which are negatives, not to bear a grudge and not to exact vengeance against against your people. V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha ani Hashem, the famous words V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. In English we say V'ahavta, but in Hebrew it's V'ahavta, for those that are medactic in these things, as we should be. What exactly does this mitzvah mean? We all we know the words, but when it comes to mitzvahs, and it is one of the positive mitzvahs of the Torah, we need to try and quantify exactly what the Torah is asking of us. And we begin with the Rambam, and the truth is that the way the Rambam introduces the mitzvah, both in Sefer Mitzvahs and in the Mishnah Torah, in Hilchos Deos, he really seems to take the mitzvah at face value. That is to say, ahava, which is an emotional bond, v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, you need the Torah commands us to love our fellow as much as we love ourselves. Now, that's the simplest reading of the pasuk. It's also, without a doubt, the most difficult way of presenting the mitzvah. And Rishonim raise questions, Ramban and others, says Ramban, I don't see how the Torah can obligate a person to love other people the way he loves himself. It seems impossible. A person naturally has a love for themselves, which hopefully is a good thing, and they naturally don't love other people to that degree. And it's almost impossible to raise one's love for everybody else, to equate it with love for oneself. And I'll prove it to you, say other Mefarshim, that it's practically impossible. Because there is one instance where someone actually did this in the Tanakh, and we practically never stop talking about it. And that's the famous friendship of David and Yehonasan. Vayaveo kenafsho. It sounds like this was out of this world. This was once, you're never going to see this again. Or in the words of Chazal, Echad haya upir samo hakosov. It happened once, and the pasuk made a public proclamation about it. But the implication is that this is completely extraordinary. The pasuk can't be saying, in the history of the Jewish people, only one person fulfilled the mitzvah of Haftarecha Kamocha properly. And that's David and Yonasan. And everybody else has not made the grade. It really sounds like that was beyond the norm. But then what is the norm of V'ahavta L'Recha Kamocha? Moreover, we should know that very case of David and Yehonasan, which seems to be the example of V'ahavta L'Recha Kamocha, the pasuk states, it's in Sefer Shmuel, about David, Yehonasan, V'yehavehu kinafsho. He loved him kinafsho, like he loved himself. That's very interesting. Because this is meant to be the ultimate fulfillment of the mitzvah of V'ahavta L'Recha Kamocha, but the terminology shifts. It doesn't say V'ayavehu Kamohu. I mean, that's the application of V'ahavta L'Recha Kamocha. The Torah doesn't say V'ahavta L'Recha Kinafshecha. It's V'ahavta L'Recha Kamocha. But David and Yonasan, it says V'ayavehu Kinafsho. It sounds like that's actually quite different than what we're talking about. But what's the difference between kamocha and kenafshecha? I mean, they sound so similar, even if they're not the same. Moreover, says Ramban, I will demonstrate to you that the halacha does not require an absolute equation, that you have the concerns of your fellow absolutely at a par with those of yourself. And it's from the famous case, which is cited in a couple of places, it's in Bar Metzia and Daf Samach Beis, of the two people, they're walking in the desert, and there's only enough water for one of them. And what to do? There's many imponderables here, but just to push all of them to the side, there's these two people, and the situation as we gauge it is that there's enough water for one of them. All things being equal, but not for two. So one of them has the water. What should he do? And it's a famous machlokas. And the first one to speak, whose name is Ben Petura, and he says you just have to divide it. There's no way that one of them, and it sounds like even the one who's in possession of the water, he can't just. Yeah. He says Yamusu Shnehem, Val Yira Bemisas Chaveiro. You can't just see his fellow die. Even though he's hardly committing an act of murder, all he's doing is drinking water, which is an act of survival. That's Ben Petura. But the halacha is not like Ben Petura. Because Rabbi Akiva enters the discussion, and Rabbi Akiva quotes the pasuk in Bahar, V'chei achicha imach. You have an obligation to keep your fellow, your brother, alive with you, but not if you're not there. V'chei achicha imach. First comes you, and this is the origins of the phrase Chayecha Kodmin. There's got to be a you in order to keep him alive with you. V'cheachicha imach, Chayecha Kodmin. Rabbi Akiva says Ramban. You know, Rabbi Akiva is one of the most ardent promoters and presenters of the mitzvah of V'ahavta L'Recha Kamocha. He's the one that says Zekla Godol BaTorah. No one is more enthusiastic about the mitzvah of V'ahavta L'Recha Kamocha, or insistent on its central importance, than Rabbi Akiva. But Rabbi Akiva is the one who says that if it's between him or you, you're entitled to choose you. What about V'ahavta L'Recha Kamocha? It doesn't mean that. So what does it mean? So here, we need to take a good look at the word kamocha, like you. Because ve'ahavta l'reicha means that you have to love him or have his well-being at heart. Practically, that's what it means. Kamocha, like you. Like you in what way? So the Chizkuni says, who's one of the Rishonim, and this is echoed by the Ksava Kabbalah, echoed and developed, that the word kamocha is like you in the sense that the Torah is telling you to love him. Kamocha, like you, meaning in the same way that you would want him to have your interests at heart, kamocha, so just like you would want him to love you, so you should love him. Would you expect him to love you as much as he loves himself? No, and the Torah isn't demanding that of you either. So the kamocha is not to love him as much as you love yourself. That's not the kamocha in terms of how you feel. It's the kamocha in terms of how you would want him to feel. You have to have a will, goodwill towards him, kamocha, like you would want him to have goodwill, kamocha, towards you. So it's quite a fine interpretation, but it in a sense it changes the measure of the equation of kamocha. And all of a sudden, it's about goodwill. You want other people to have goodwill towards you. That's a natural thing. So have goodwill towards them. Now, there's a major question, and we can't discuss v'ahavta l'reicha kamocha without it. And that is, who qualifies for this mitzvah? Does everyone qualify? Is anyone disqualified? Who is reicha here? So you should know, and I'll quote. I'll quote the Rashbam. I have it in front of me here, and it's kedai to hear it from the Rashbam himself. The ahavta l'reicha kamocha. Define the word reicha, your fellow. What does your fellow mean? What it sounds like it means. Says Rashbam, reicha hu imtov hu. He's called reicha if he's good. Avalo imhu rasha, but not if he's a wicked person. Reicha is a category. It's a subcategory within the Jewish people. We'd like to think everyone's in, but if a person's not in, avalo imhu rasha dichsiv yiras Hashem sinasra. The fear of God is the hatred of evil. That's a very strident comment of the Rashbam. There are those who may distinguish between hating evil and hating wicked people. The Balei Tanya in his Shulchan Aruch discusses perhaps the distinction between hating the evil within a person and doesn't mean you have to hate the person themselves, but the Rashbam made an equation between the two. Now, we should note at this stage, because if we're looking to see how this is operational, this comment of Rashbam that Reicha excludes Rasha'im is practically inoperable. And the reason why is based on a Chazon Ish. So the Chazon Ish discusses in Yerideah, who is a Rasha? Define a Rasha. And based on certain Rishonim, the Chazon Ish says the definition is very simple. Someone who willfully does Averos and resists any rebuke. That means that not only has he done things that are wrong, you've rebuked him and he doesn't care. Says the Chazon Ish, that's a very important formulation because he only qualifies for the designation of Rasha when he's done something wrong and has rejected rebuke. If that's the case, then he'll only be called a Rasha if he was rebuked. If no one rebuked him, he hasn't rejected rebuke. Says Chazon Ish, so now here's an interesting question. When is a person considered rebuked? How do you what qualifies as rebuke? And the reason why it's a question is because already in the times of Chazal, in the Toras Kohanim, I believe it's Ben Azai, who says, I wonder if there's anyone in times who's capable of administering rebuke. For the mitzvah of rebuke, it has to be done with such compassion and wisdom and such a vision whereby the person really feels that you have his interest at heart. It's got to be 100% Lashem Shamayim. which is the opposite of what some people consider rebuke to be. There is a notion that when you rebuke a person, if you don't make him feel completely worthless as a human being, as well as what he happens to be doing, you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah. You should probably try again. But the reality is exactly the opposite. It's only if he literally feels as if you just saved him from a financial loss or something like that. That's how he should feel when you just pointed out a mistake that he has made. Says Chazanish, the operation of halacha seems to be we can never consider ourselves to have fully administered rebuke. And if that's true, then no one is ever post-rebuke. And therefore it's difficult to find a rasha. That's the statement of the Chazanish, which is a major statement. It's halacha lemaisa. This should not be confused, by the way, lahavdil elef havdalos, with another move to rid the world of Rishayim, which is more the popular notion nowadays. There's no Rishayim because there's no such thing as sin anymore. So no one could ever do anything wrong. There is no wrong. That's its own problem. But, says the Chazanish, a person can do something wrong. He's not yet a Rasha. And yet, even back to the Parshanut, and that's an important aside, but back to the Parshanut, L'Reacha comes to exclude a Rasha. It's very interesting that in many other situations, the word Reacha does not exclude a Rasha. It refers to all Jewish people. They're all called Reacha. No, they don't need to qualify. We find, for example, in Parshas Mishpatim, money restitution for damages, Ki Gach Ish Es Shorei Ehu. Sure, ish es shorei ehu, the shore of his fellow. No one ever said that if his, the victim was a Rasha, so you don't have to pay him if you're escorting him, because he's not Reacha. Unless you say that it depends on context. But this is a question that is raised. Reacha seems to be all-encompassing. However, that doesn't mean necessarily that everyone qualifies. Even if Reacha refers generally to the Jewish people, there is a parallel comment of another of the Rishonim, the Uraim, Rabbi Eliezer Mimetz. And the Uraim says that when the Pasuk says, V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, and here's now, again, chiddush in Parshanut, V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, it excludes Rishayim from this mitzvah. Why? Because Rishayim are not kamocha. We assume, by the way, that you are okay. If you're okay, then kamocha defines reacha. Reacha, in principle, means everyone. But the Torah doesn't say v'ahavta l'reacha, it says v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. The amazing point about the Uraim, on the one hand, he seems to reach the same practical conclusion as the Rashbam, that Rishayim, however you define them, are not included. But he doesn't get it from Reacha, he gets it from Kamocha. But it sounds like for him, this is, in a sense, he has now sidestepped the entire difficulty raised by the Ramban. Because the Ramban's question was, how can the Torah command you to love a person like you love yourself? It's impossible. But according to the Uraim, the word kamocha isn't coming to qualify the word va'ahavta. It's coming to qualify the word reacha. It's not that whoever's reacha, va'ahavta kamocha, love him like yourself. No. Whoever's reacha kamocha, va'ahavta. To what degree? Pasuk doesn't say. So you see the shift now in terms of the parshanot. What exactly is the word kamocha coming to qualify? Okay. So, acharei hadvarim ha'ele, and we've seen some of the halachic discussions which are rooted in the parshanut here. Let's come to Rashi. Rashi, on the words ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, says, Amar Rabbi Akiva, ze klal godol b'Torah. That's it. These words are taken from the Torah's Kohanim. That's where Rabbi Akiva is reported as saying this. Very nice. The problem is, Rashi's not allowed to be very nice. That is to say, Rashi's job is not to tell me that things are important, or quote people who tell me that things are important. Rashi certainly concurs that it's important, because Rabbi Akiva said it. But what gets entry into a perush of Rashi on the Torah are pshat issues. If there's a pshat in the pasuk, Rashi will address it. If there's no pshat in the pasuk, and apparently there isn't, so Rashi just comes along and says, you know, Rabbi Akiva says this is exceedingly important mitzvah. That's not Rashi's job in his perush on Pshuto Shemikra. So it's an interesting shaila, because it's such an amazing statement. But still, Mefarshei Rashi are bothered because it's completely out of place within Rashi's comment. Within Rashi's commentary, that is. Okay? So it's very interesting because Rabbi Kiva's words now need to be examined, number one, for themselves, as Rabbi Kiva's words, but they also need to be re-examined within the context of Rashi's commentary on the Torah. And so, says the Maskil Adol, we're so used to this maxim of Rabbi Akiva, Zeka Gadol BaTorah. What does it mean? It's a great principle in the Torah. Well, what does that mean? Zeka Gadol BaTorah, says Maskil Adol, it seems clear to me that to understand the full intent of Rabbi Akiva, we need to be aware of a bit more background. The Gemara in Masechet Shabbos in Perek Bamei Madlikin, Daf Lamed Aleph, discusses the famous story of the prospective ger. Right? He wants to convert to Judaism, however, he's on a tight schedule, so he wants to learn the entire Torah while he's standing on one foot. Gareini amanas shetzandeni kol haTorah aregel achas. Okay, so first he goes to Shammai. I don't know who it was who directed him to Shammai's house first, but it wasn't a very long meeting. He went to Shammai. Shammai showed him the door. And by the way, Mefarshim explained, Rabbi Shlomo Salanter talks about this, from a certain point of view, because we know that in the end Hillel will take him in and he'll get to work on him, but from a certain point of view, we probably identify more with Shammai than with Hillel. Because if you don't have the genuity of Hillel, it sounds like an affront to Torah. Because when he says, I want to hear the Torah on one foot, really it sounds like he's saying that, I mean, how much can there be already? Which for those who know a little bit about Torah know the answer is a great deal. It's a lifetime study. So there's almost like an implicit, there's a subtext of a zilzal here. Okay, we don't take kindly to people that are denigrating in terms of what we hold most dear. So Shammai held this person was not a serious personality. He wasn't going to waste his time. He felt it was an affront to Torah. And so would we. It's interesting. But then, of course, he comes to Hillel, and Hillel's ready for him. And Hillel says, he says it in Aramaic, but it's essentially a translation of sorts of Haftarach HaKamocha. Hillel's words are Da'aloch Sani, something which is repugnant to you, L'chavrach lotabit. So don't do it to your friend. Which is interesting. Number one, it's Aramaic, not Hebrew, which is not surprising. And we don't know if the person spoke to him in Hebrew. Maybe he spoke in Aramaic. But it's also phrased in the negative. It's more preventative as opposed to positive. And moreover, and this is interesting, once again, v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, you have to do what... things that are distasteful or repugnant to you, so don't do it to your friend. And the opposite implication seems to be, and things that you do like, so do it to your friend. Except there are many things, it's a very individual thing. There are certain things that the person himself can't stand. Da'alach sani. What if he's allergic to, he has a unique allergy, or just the distaste of something, but no one else shares that? I don't think it's a fulfillment of Haftarecha Kamocha. It's repugnant for him, but he knows it's not repugnant for anyone else, and therefore it's fine. He can't stand strawberries. So he won't give his friend strawberries because they're repugnant to him. So that's Hillel's maxim. It's not true. And things that he does like. But maybe that's his like. Maybe he likes collecting stamps. And no one he knows else does. So that's not Haftarecha Kamocha to give him something that they don't particularly value. So one has to, the Kamocha here has to be that kind of reciprocal. Have his interests at heart, just like you would want him to have your interests at heart. It's back to that Kamocha in that way. In any event, Rishonim raised the question. Because even taking Hillel at his word, and he said, you don't like it, don't do it to him. That's the entire Torah. The idach perushahu. Everything else is commentary. Zil gemor. Don't you want to learn the commentary? Of course you do. So off you go. Go to learn. You asked me for the whole Torah on one foot. I gave it to you, and then I gave you homework for the rest of your life. Except Mefarshim ask, even within Hillel's presentation, it's the whole Torah on one foot? All of it? It seems to be roughly half of it. because mitzvahs, as we know, are divided between ben adam lamakom, ben adam lachaveiro. So after recha kamocha, you can say is the entire concept of ben adam lachaveiro, which it is. And you can say, and the rest is detail, and there's plenty of details. The halachas of hachnasas orchim and bikocholim and all of those things. But what about ben adam lamakom? No one's ever spoken about that. So how could Hillel, even in terms of his abbreviated version, say this is the whole Torah? Rashi raises this question. Rashi in the Gemara and Shabbos, and his answer is astounding. Says Rashi, V'haftar o'echa kamocha incorporates all mitzvahs. Between man and man, of course, and also between man and God. Why? Because Hashem is also called Re'acha. Pasuk in Mishle. Re'acha v'rea avicha al tazob. Don't forsake your friend or the friend of your father. That's Hashem. That's a pshat in the pasuk. It's amazing. We've never had HaKadosh Baruch Hu presented in this capacity before. Avinu, Makenu, Adirenu, Barenu, and also there's an aspect of Re'acha. Why? So Rashi says you don't want Hashem to ignore you when you talk to him. No one likes that. So don't ignore him when he talks to you. All of a sudden, it's this dynamic in terms of bin adam lamakom. That's an incredible chiddush of Rashi, and therefore v'haftar recha kamocha really incorporates everything. Says the Maskil David. That's really what Rabbi Akiva meant when he says zeh klal godol batera, klal kolel v'haftar recha kamocha incorporates everything in the Torah. Klal Godol, it is the one unifying principle of the entire Torah. So Rabbi Akiva's depiction of Klal Godol b'Torah is exactly Hillel saying that this is the entire Torah. That's what it means. And that's why, says Maskil David, Rashi does quote it in his Pirush on the Torah, because it relates to the reading and translating of the Pasuk. V'haftarecha kamocha, says Rashi, but he's not very explicit about it because it's such a sensitive thing to say. But says Rashi, there's a pshat issue here. Who's Re'acha? Who's Re'acha? Says Rashi. Rabbi Akiva said this is a klal gadol b'Torah. That means it includes everything. That gives you to understand now. And the Rashi on our pasuk and the Rashi on the story in the Gemara, mashlim in zeh, it's the same Rashi. You know from Rashi there that Re'acha includes Hashem. And that now is a question of reading and translating the pasuk. And it gets entry into Rashi's Perush on the Torah. Moreover, the Nachlas Yaakov, Rabbi Yaakov Selnik, who was also one of the great Mefarshei Rashi, is in a very similar vein to Maskil David and says something unbelievable. Because the Maskil David has told us that Rashi is explaining that Re'acha can really even include Hashem to a certain degree. That's an amazing thing to say. Where do we first hear of such a thing? You know, Rashi said it in the Gemara, says Nachlas David. You heard about it earlier than that. Look in the pasuk. Lo tikom lo titoret b'nei amecha, okay? Ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha ani Hashem. So it says the Nachlas Yaakov, you know that Rashi throughout, right, as a matter of course, has been explaining that what there's many psukim that end with ani Hashem elokeichem, and Rashi typically comments to say these are matters that relate to the heart. Don't think that you can fool your way through it and say, I didn't mean it. Ani Hashem, I know what you're thinking, and you bear a grudge, I know, and etc. and so forth. Here, Rashi doesn't comment. Because Ani Hashem isn't there in that capacity. Ani Hashem, I'll know if you're fulfilling V'haftar Recha Kamocha. Ani Hashem is a designation of what the word Re'acha means. V'haftar Recha Kamocha, you know that is Re'acha with Ani Hashem. Hashem. Unbelievable. So this is now, and that's a chiddush in the pasuk, no question about it. And that's what Rashi is referring to in his Perush on the Torah. We know, and I'll conclude, we've mentioned it, I believe, in the past, but certainly worthwhile mentioning again within the context of the days of the Omer and with a view towards getting a deeper understanding of V'haftar Recha Kamocha. Rabbi Akiva says, Zeh Klal Godol b'Torah. What does he mean? What it sounds like it means, and we've seen the Maskil David, this is a major principle, it's an all-encompassing principle in the Torah. There is a Hasidic interpretation of this statement of Rabbi Akiva, and I heard it from my father's Zatzal many years ago. I don't remember in whose name he said it. But here we are, Rabbi Akiva. V'haftarecha kamocha, zeh klal gadol b'Torah, a great principle in the Torah. Says the Rebbe, we know during the days of the Omer, so the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, they met their end. It's a time of avelos. Other people have died in the history of the Jewish people, but somehow this found a mark. And as we know, it's because lo nagu kavod zeh b'zeh, they weren't considerate enough of each other, they didn't give accord honor to each other, which is itself needs an entire discussion as to why that should result in them dying. I mean, such an extreme response, but that's what is identified as the root cause, and that's the Gemara in Yevamos and Daf Samach Beis. So the Rebbe said, that's what Rabbi Kiva is the teacher, and his Talmidim, they're dropping like flies. V'haftarecha kamocha, what about it? Says the Rebbe, zeh klal gadol. It's a great principle. B'Torah. But it stayed in the Torah. In other words, they read it in the Torah, and it stayed in the Torah. And then they never took it out, and they never applied it. So it's a tragic comment. It's such a great principle, and still in the Torah. No one ever took it out and used it. I would like to add perhaps a certain PS to this vort. Everyone's aware of the mitzvah of Haftarecha Kamocha. It's such an enormous principle. And perhaps that's why the common notion doesn't allow it to be used. Because most situations that we have are not enormous situations. They're everyday situations. They're small situations. Day-to-day things. Sometimes the greatness of a concept can be its undoing, because it makes it unwieldy. When you think of the greatness of Haftarecha Kamocha, you're expecting a great event to warrant the implementation of Haftarecha Kamocha. When would I fulfill this great thing? When something great happens, I save someone's life, I get them a job, something major. But most of the things that surround us are really minor, seemingly. So they never really seem to qualify for Haftarecha Kamocha. So if the Rebbe said that the problem of Haftarecha Kamocha, it's a klal gadol, but it stayed in the Torah, perhaps the reason why it stayed in the Torah is because it's a klal gadol. It's too big. No one ever took it out. You wouldn't take it out just for to show a person courtesy or consideration or a kind word or just the time of day or an encouraging gesture. Those are small things, but this is such a big thing. If his life was in danger, I'd be ready. I'd be the first one, and after the Kamocha, I'm ready to go. But in a sense, we wait. We move past so many opportunities for this great principle to be used, waiting for something that is great enough to use it for. But of course, ultimately, that's the opposite of greatness. The greatness of after the Kamocha is that it should be implied in all of these cases. And it's important because, as we know, often we contemplate major problems and we don't see how minor events can be part of the solution. That, of course, is the message of the Torah throughout. Rabbi Kiva looks at his Talmidim. They didn't give each other the time of day or whatever it is that they didn't, because they're all aware of Haftarecha Kamocha, but none of their peers were great enough to warrant using this klal gadol. But the greatness of the principle is that we should use it wherever we can. That's its greatness, that it applies everywhere. And that's a lesson that I think certainly well worth reflecting upon, certainly in these days. And with all that's going on in these days, the more Haftarecha Kamocha there is, the better between everyone. Everyone is Re'echa, and the more Shalom Al Yisrael there is between us, the more we can open Mitzvah Hashem for Shalom Al Yisrael in the broader sense of the word. We'll leave it over there.